Iran defends its measures in response to the recent IAEA resolution, saying that the obstacle to the JCPOA revival is the U.S. refusal to fulfill its obligations. The British economy declining for a second month in a row, heightening fears that the country is heading for a recession. And a U.S. House committee investigating the Capitol attack says there is enough evidence to indict former President Donald Trump for trying to overturn the results of the 2020 election. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behruz Najafieh. Good to have you with us. Iran has defended its measures in response to the recent resolution against the country's nuclear program by the Board of Governors of the IAEA.
Definitely, we couldn't let the political and non-technical measure of the agency go unanswered. Our actions have been decisive and proportionate. What Iran is doing now falls strictly under its nuclear safeguards obligations. What Iran has stopped doing is its voluntary measures. It is unfortunate if the IAEA's Director General would not know this or intentionally pose Iran's measures differently. Iran is entitled to end the commitments it undertook as a goodwill gesture when the other party violates a formerly agreed obligation. Therefore, Iran's measures create no proliferation worries.
The spokesman also said that the IAEA's resolution is driven by Israel and backed by its Western allies. He said the agency's director general has failed his duty to remain impartial and has been making comments against Iran beyond his technical capacity. The spokesman also dismissed the director general's comments that Iran's measures impede an agreement in the Vienna talks. He said the obstacle to the talks remains Washington's refusal to fulfill its obligations under the agreement. The Venezuelan president is in Iran to expand ties between the two countries. While both under stringent sanctions imposed by the U.S., Tehran and Caracas are poised to expand their alliance. Yusuf Shalal reports.
Venezuela is one of the farthest countries from Iran, but it's among the closest allies. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has had a busy schedule since he arrived in Iran on Friday. Here, he took a tour of one of Iran's major engineering companies, Mapna Group, where he was warmly welcomed by the Iranian tech firm.
It's a pleasure to have the Honorable Venezuelan President Mr. Nicolas Maduro at our company to present some of our capabilities, products, achievements, and our future plans to His Excellency.
Maduro has been in Tehran as part of an official trip that was slated to take 2 days, but later was announced to last for 4 days. Heading a politico-economic delegation, the Venezuelan official and his Iranian counterpart, Ibrahim Raisi, signed a 20-year cooperation agreement on Saturday to expand ties in the oil and petrochemical industries, military, and economy.
We will witness how the new world will take shape and how we will stand up to problems and secure progress. Iranian and Venezuelan youth should know that the future world will enjoy equality and justice and that we will stand up to imperialism.
Iran has been a key player in supplying fuel to energy-hungry Venezuela. Both sanctioned by the United States, Tehran and Caracas has boosted their partnership since 2020, especially in energy projects and oil swaps, helping the South American nation mitigate the impacts of Washington's embargoes. During Maduro's visit, the two sides also agreed to launch direct flights between Caracas and Tehran in order to promote tourism and trade between the two countries.
With shared concerns, shared interests, and a common rival, Tehran and Caracas are poised to push the envelope on their strategic alliance, viewing it as a counterforce to what they call Washington's coercive measures against both nations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The UK economy has suffered its first back-to-back slump since the COVID outbreak, heightening fears that the country is heading for a recession. According to the Office for National Statistics, the gross domestic product fell by a bigger than expected 0.3% in April. The economy also registered a drop of 0.1% in March. Output in the services, production, and construction sectors fell, and that's the first time that all main sectors have shrunk in more than a year. Prices are rising at their fastest rate in 30 years, driven by record high fuel and energy costs. The Bank of England has warned the UK is facing a sharp economic slowdown and an inflation of over 10% by the end of the year. Ukraine says its forces are fighting fiercely for, quote, every meter of Severodonetsk, a city that's the major battleground of Russia's offensive in the east. The Ukrainian president says that a key tactical goal of what it described as the occupiers is to press in Severodonetsk. Volodymyr Zelensky says that Russia's military was trying to deploy reserves in the eastern Donbass region. Russian forces have taken most of Severodonetsk, but Ukrainian troops remain in control of an industrial area and a chemical plant where hundreds of civilians are sheltering. A local Ukrainian official says that Russian forces have destroyed a bridge to another city across the river, and that means civilians just have one way out of the city. Okay, live from Donetsk, let's bring in Johnny Miller, our correspondent there. Johnny, bring us an update on the situation there.
Well, hundreds of Ukrainian soldiers are dying every day in the Donbass. As Russia has air and artillery superiority, it's reputed that Russia's casualties are high as well. They look like they've taken Severodonetsk, but the battle for Donbass looks like it'll continue to be long and hard. Russia is being accused of war crimes in Kharkiv at the moment, and the Ukrainian army has just been shelling where I am now, the center of town. I just went outside to find my neighbors sheltering in the corridor. So the war continues very much here. There is some calls, increasing signs that some people, some countries, at least behind the scenes, are calling for peaceful negotiation. Indeed, the NATO head, Jens Stoltenberg, talked yesterday suggesting that this war will have to go to a negotiating table at some point. But at the moment, that does still seem a long way off. And it looks like one side or the other is going to have to make a major breakthrough on the front lines for any side to start thinking about negotiations.
Mm-hmm. And Johnny, regarding this plan that Kiev says it still has under its control, you know, we had some reports saying that there are some civilians sheltering there, also some other reports saying that there are soldiers. So what have you heard about that?
Yeah, this looks like a replay of what happened in Mariupol at the Azovstal, where Ukrainian soldiers retreated into a steel plant. There were many civilians there as well. That went on for weeks. It did hold up the Russian army as a whole battle group had to surround the plant. Civilians were let out first, and then finally the Ukrainian military and the Azov battalion surrendered. Both sides claimed a victory there. Ukraine claimed some kind of a victory because it was able to hold up part of the Russian army, and that may well be a strategy that Ukraine is using again to try and stop the Russian advances by keeping a pocket of their resistance in the city. Of course, the civilians there as well. Russia won't want to risk too many casualties on its own side. Won't want to be accused of killing civilians there either. So it looks like it might be a replay of what happened in Mariupol, an attempt perhaps to hold up the Russian advances.
Okay, thanks for that, John Miller, our correspondent in Donetsk. The local elections have been held in around 1,000 municipalities across Italy. A low turnout was reported in most places amid growing dissatisfaction with politics and anti-government sentiments.
On Sunday, some 9 million Italians were called to elect mayors and councillors in 971 towns and cities in a vote in which the strength of mainstream political parties has been put to the test before national elections next year. Elections were held in big cities such as Genoa, Verona and Palermo and in hundreds of provincial capitals. The turnout was lower than 50% in most municipalities, as disaffection with political actors and institutions continues to be on the rise. On Sunday, Italians were also called to vote on 5 referenda regarding justice issues. The referenda failed because they did not achieve the required quorum of 50% of voters, a further sign of electors' disenchantment with the country's politics.
The doors of the halls of power have been closed and the people got left out. I cast my ballot today simply to preserve my right to vote. The government should have not held a referendum on such technical justice matters. It's been just a waste of public resources.
Far-right party Brothers of Italy is likely to win the highest number of votes according to polls. The Brothers of Italy was the only party that stayed out of Mario Draghi's government. Nevertheless, the ideological distance between its leader, Giorgia Meloni, and Prime Minister Draghi is narrow. Meloni, a staunch NATO advocate, is supportive of Italy sending arms to Ukraine and of increased spending on defense.
Polling stations had been deserted by voters, not only because of disaffection with politics, but also because the Italian media barely talked about this referendum and local elections. Their focus is the war in Ukraine only. We are sick and tired of politicians' empty promises.
Since the start of the Ukraine conflict, opinion polls have steadily shown over half of the Italians oppose the sending of weapons to Ukraine and want the government to work for a peace proposal. Their calls have so far gone utterly unheard. Max Civili, Rome.
And the U.S. lawmakers are pushing for new legal proceedings against former President Donald Trump over the January 6, 2020 unrest that saw his supporters storm Congress. A select committee investigating the incident says that it has gathered enough evidence that warrants criminal indictment of Trump for trying to overturn the results of the election. Congressional hearings are also scheduled that investigators say shed light on Trump's attempts to spread false claims that the vote was rigged. The panel began its work last week. It's now calling on the Justice Department to indict Trump. This is unprecedented, as no U.S. president or ex-president has ever been indicted. Trump supporters attacked the Capitol building when Congress was certifying Biden's victory. The attack left several people dead. Inflation in the United States is still on the rise, hitting a new 40-year high in May. A surge in prices has proved the real burden on families, forcing households to pay considerably more for commodities like food, gas, and rent. Now, under such circumstances, President Biden remains willing to continue back in Ukraine in its war with Russia, even at the expense of his own people.
Rising costs in the U.S. have pushed American citizens to the edge with soaring inflation and the government's inability to control the matter so far. According to the Labor Department, the annual inflation rate rose to 8.6% in May, shattering any hope Americans might have had for relief from the skyrocketing inflation. With inflation hitting the highest rate since 1981, rising cost of living has been squeezing households and putting pressure on policymakers to bring the issue under control. In response to the issue, the U.S. Central Bank has since March been raising interest rates, but the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, which has driven up the price of oil and commodities like wheat as it disrupts exports from the two countries, has made tackling the problem more difficult. Polls show a majority of Americans see inflation as the top problem facing the country. Consumer sentiment has plunged and U.S. President Joe Biden's approval ratings have sunk as Republicans criticize him over the issue. But the U.S. government seems to be more concerned about the conflict in Ukraine, where it has so far given away billions of dollars in weaponry.
This definitely hurts the U.S. economy and Americans, the Biden administration's decision not to push for negotiations between Ukraine and Russia is to many of us inexplicable. It's irrational. It's certainly causing enormous carnage and tragedy in that region. And in addition, it's hurting the United States. You know, the average American, when we go to the gas pump these days, I live in California, I'm paying well over $6 per gallon. This is extremely difficult for many American families. So the Biden administration, I think, has been very unwise and damaging in the policies that have been pushed by Secretary of State Blinken and by Victoria Nuland, both of whom are basically neoconservatives.
Now, with the government apparently unable to rein in the rising inflation, the core consumer price index rose 0.6% from the month before and 6% from a year ago. Food prices were up more than 10% last month compared to May 2021, and energy costs surged more than 34%.
The price of gasoline in the U.S. has also witnessed a record high, averaging more than $5 a gallon for the first time. Meanwhile, Biden's attempts of lowering prices, namely a record release of barrels from U.S. strategic reserves, waivers on rules for producing summer gasoline, and leaning on major OPEC countries to boost output, have so far proven to be ineffective.
Certainly, the Biden administration should have foreseen these extremely damaging and disturbing consequences. I think that perhaps their policies are driven by somehow, perhaps they think that seeming warlike will help them at the elections coming up very soon. The midterm elections in November are of great concern to the administration because Biden's approval rate is extremely low right now. So they're clearly taking actions that they hope will bolster the results of the election in favor of Democrats.
Saudi Arabia and several other OPEC countries have rebuffed requests by the U.S. to boost oil production beyond the gradual amount. This has led to U.S. lawmakers seeking alternatives to the oil cartel to solve their problems. So far, the U.S. Senate has passed a bill called No Oil Producing and Exporting Cartels Act of 2021. The bill, aside from creating complications for oil companies, is intended to protect consumers and businesses from spikes in costs of petroleum. But analysts warn that implementing it could have some dangerous unintended consequences. Many say the move could harm U.S. energy companies more as OPEC members produce oil much more cheaply than U.S. companies.
Moving on, tensions remain high on the Korean Peninsula as the Seoul military says the North fired a series of suspected artillery shots over the weekend. Seoul says that the shots were a traditional type with relatively low altitude and short range. South Korean Joint Chiefs of Staff has stressed that Seoul maintains a firm military readiness in collaboration with the United States. The latest development comes days after leader Kim Jong-un vowed to use power for power to defend the North's sovereignty. North Korea has carried out a blitz of sanctions-defying weapons tests this year. Those include firing an intercontinental ballistic missile at full range for the first time since 2017. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Economic divide.
The Ukraine conflict continues to devastate the world economies, in particular economies in the Eurozone. As countries in Europe continue to ramp up pressure on Russia in the form of sanctions led by the U.S., their inflation is hitting record highs. Hi, I'm Kavitat Wei. This is Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, the Eurozone inflation, the highest on record, coming in at 8.1%. But inflation is not just restricted to Europe. This has become a global headache and a global phenomenon, like for the UK and for the US, experiencing inflation that they haven't seen in decades. Next, we're going to take a look at central banks, how they are scrambling on how to deal with the problem. Well, raising interest rates seems to be their only solution. Meanwhile, they are also grappling with the risk of recessions that may be occurring as we speak. Also, we are going to take a look at energy prices, some say at the heart of inflation, they're increasing as European countries failed to have a unified stance when it came to buying or not buying Russian gas. Do stay tuned.
The inflation rate in the Eurozone has reached levels which were unthinkable several years ago. According to official data released by Eurostat, Eurozone inflation has risen to a new record high of 8.1% in May from 7.4% in April. That is the highest annual level since the creation of the euro currency in 1999. This is the 10th consecutive month that prices have been rising, and there are no signs of a let-up. Germany, which is Europe's biggest economy, has been among the hardest hit. Its inflation rate now stands at a record 8.7%. France, another Eurozone economic powerhouse, has experienced an inflation rate of 5.8%. Inflation rate in Spain stands at 8.5%, and in Italy, 7.3%. The fastest hike in price was registered in Lithuania. In May, the inflation rate of that small Baltic state stood at 15.7%. Energy costs remain the single biggest factor pushing up prices for consumers and businesses. In May, it rose by 39.2% from a year earlier. The European Commission recently lowered its economic growth forecast to 2.7% this year from the 4% estimate in winter. There are warnings that Europe may tip into a sharp slowdown or outright recession before the end of the year.
The dragon has not yet full blasted itself, but it's underway.
It's time now to take a look at some of the social media posts on this. As a matter of fact, taking a look at what we are seeing in terms of inflation, just the latest, just a Google search on news, you can see Turkey's inflation rate is again the focus. Taking a look at the U.S. inflation, it says has it peaked, and also how central banks are scrambling to deal with inflation. Just some of the latest news results for that. Well, let's take a look at this first post from an online website. It says U.S.-EU inflation results of unprecedented money printing. That's according to the Russian President Vladimir Putin. He pointed to the U.S. printing press and the EU green energy policies, in which inflation in the U.S. is a consequence of mistakes by American financial authorities, which they admitted to, while in the EU it has more to do with short-sighted energy policies in Brussels. The Russian President Vladimir Putin also said on Friday that either way it has nothing to do with Moscow or its actions in Ukraine. Next up, Twitter posts, while oil and gas companies are making record profits, they are charging consumers record prices, and every single House Republican just voted against stopping them from price gouging the Americans. Let that sink in. We're going to talk about price gouging later on in the program. Next up, inflation is global. Turkey's inflation soars to 73% as food and energy costs skyrocket. Then a look at this particular post, Biden's real plan to fight inflation. Just a blame game is what's going on, according to this post. And this chart actually outlines that. It says from him calling inflation transitory to then blaming the former U.S. President Donald Trump, then blaming the Republicans, and then coming back full circle and then calling it transitory again. Now, next we take a look at this particular post, which says Eurozone inflation has moved up to 8.1%. That is the highest level ever. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank is still holding interest rates at negative levels. This is perhaps the greatest disconnect between easy monetary policy and unabating rising prices that the world has ever seen. All right, that obviously is a quick snapshot of what people think and what is out there when it comes to inflation. Let me introduce our guest for a breakdown on this in our first Q&A. We have Benjamin Chow who joins us. He's a professor at the Paris School of Technology and Business who's currently residing in Beijing, China. Okay, Benjamin Chow, welcome to Economic Divide. The war in Ukraine has compounded a problem that existed in the world, and focused on price increases that has led to inflation. This has been especially true in Europe. For example, as of March 2022, the inflation rate in the European Union, 7.8%, up and increasing. Turkey, looking at around 70%. How can inflation then be eradicated in order to bring it back to pre-existing levels?
Well, in monetary economics, the famous rule of thumb is that inflation is everywhere a monetary phenomenon. I think 95% of inflation should probably follow this rule. Fundamentally, inflation is driven by expectation of continuous rise of price levels, which in turn is driven by the relative shortage of goods given the money stock at hand. The current sanctions against Russia and the disruption of supplies from Ukraine create serious energy and crops shortage. And shortage expectation, and thus we are seeing historic inflation in decades. Now, the very fact that Europe relies on Russia for nearly 40% of its natural gas and 25% of its oil means that it is not possible to remove Europeans' need of Russian oil and gas in the near term.
All right, let's bring in Marshall Baker. Marshall Baker is an economist at the Schiller Institute who joins us. Marshall Baker, welcome to Economic Divide. The U.S. and its allies are being blamed for actually prolonging the Ukraine conflict. The U.S. has actually not even held back, saying its true intentions is to weaken Russia militarily mainly. Now, the question is at what cost? This is coming at a cost for the Europeans, also for the Americans who are suffering as a result. And the U.S. is taking the lead here in terms of following a policy towards Ukraine that is to the detriment of the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, what we're seeing in prolonging the combat in Ukraine is a purposeful decision by global NATO, you could call it, Brussels, London, and the United States. Many of the leaders here have said they want to weaken Russia or just debilitate Russia. So many Ukrainians as well as Russians are dying. Millions of people are displaced because of this wrongful policy of it's like adding gasoline to the fire.
It is time now for our Info News section of the program. This is where we take a look at economic news from around the world. Hopefully we have something from where you are. Our first item, anti-Russia sanctions. The title, shooting themselves in the foot, Western sanctions on Russia. This is something that we have covered, but again, it's showing itself. In this case, this entry went on to say that Moscow has diversified its commodities exports as the EU faces the difficult task of replacing Russia as its energy supplier. That is something that the EU has been grappling with from day one since the Russia conflict or the Ukraine conflict started. Next up, Russia-China trade. Trade with China has hit a record high, $200 billion this year. Moscow continuing to pivot to Asia as ties with the West crumble. Now, it goes on to say before the start of the conflict, the European Union actually was Russia's top trading partner. But now that has been replaced with China. Really no surprise there. Everybody assumed that that is the trend that would follow after the conflict with Ukraine started. Next up, oil prices. OPEC to increase oil supply after pressure from the U.S. Well, good news maybe, but the prices just keep rising. In fact, the price of oil rose after the announcement was made. Oil producers said that they would raise the price by 50%, but it seems like that did not have an impact on the market. Only time will tell how that is going to pan out. And finally, mass revolts. That's right. That's what the title said. Are we headed for mass revolts to upturn the global economic model? How long can billionaires continue to amass wealth while the world's poorest struggle to buy food? The number of severely food insecure people has doubled from 135 million to 276 million. And that is why this entry is questioning this, that it is a possibility for it to happen. Well, that covers the items for this part of the program in our Info News section. If you have any news from your part of the world, economically, economic in its nature, please send it to us.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to our in-depth section, Inflation, the theme of today's program. And in this case, we want to take a look at the not-so-obvious reasons behind this phenomenon. And in this case, in point, corporate greed is our focus. Okay, the U.S. is filled with multinational conglomerates that control vast parts of the U.S. economy and its output. Now, some of the giants when it comes to how they are actually in control of huge parts of the market. General Mills, Nestle, Kellogg's, Mars, Danone, Unilever, Mondelez, and Coca-Cola and PepsiCo, all the different subsidiaries and brands that they control, that amounts to quite a bit of the U.S. economy. They've monopolized these sectors, which covers a vast variety of industries. Basically, to summarize this, the fruits of economic growth, well, they are being hoarded by America's profitable corporations. That's one of the conclusions that is being made. And these corporations are facing negligible competition. A lot of the concern about corporate concentration, well, it surrounds its potential to drive up prices. The fewer options there are, well, the fewer places consumers actually have to shop for goods and services. And as a result, then there is less pressure for competitors to keep the prices down. So they control the prices. And of course, the only way is up when it comes to profits. However, everybody's ignoring the deeper structural reasons for the price increases. The concentration of the American economy basically is in the hands of a very few corporate giants with the power to raise prices, which is what we just covered over there. This is putting another perspective to that. So when you take a look at that, then we have to take a look at another conclusion that is being met here. Let's take a look at the market and how, if it was competitive, what would happen. So you got the corporations. These are some of the things that would happen. Corporations would keep their prices as low as possible. They would do that because they would be competing for customers, especially new customers. But when there's no competition, for example, no desire for new customers or keeping prices low, obviously a result of the lack of competition. And corporations would do everything to avoid passing those costs on to consumers in the form of higher prices, and that would be for the fear of that happening. Now, the lack of competition is overall what we're looking at behind why monopolies are successful in keeping prices at whatever point they want. You actually don't have to go too far to see how this is happening. Let's take a look at what U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren has said, making a reference to Chevron and Exxon, who have doubled the profits, in which she said, this isn't about inflation, this is about price gouging. What is price gouging? What does she mean by that? Well, price gouging, the definition that is when a seller increases the prices of goods, services, or commodities to a level much higher than is considered reasonable or fair. In some countries, that is actually illegal. And usually, this type of event, price gouging, occurs after a demand or supply shock. So the Ukraine conflict can be a reference point in terms of that shock or demand or supply shock to actually occur. All right, let's take a look at another example of a monopoly. In this case, in point, we're going to take a look at what happened in the U.S., the baby formula shortage. I don't know if you've heard about that. Well, that is something that has occurred. What is the reason behind that? Well, in part, it's due to a monopoly over this particular item. Why? Abbott Nutrition is the name. Yes, it controls 40% of the baby formula market in the U.S. Although the production had stopped, it has since announced that it would start up again, and the prices as a result are projected to increase. Why? Because a lot of price gouging that we were talking about was occurring with the minimal supply that was available in the market. So Abbott Nutrition takes a look at the price gouging, seeing how prices increased. You can be sure that they're going to increase their prices before the production was actually halted. All right, let's bring back Marsha Baker. She's an economist at the Schiller Institute to get her analysis into this. Marsha Baker, welcome back. U.S. inflation, we're going to take a look at that as our theme in this question. The highest level that is seen, consumer price index of the U.S. in March rose by 8.5% from a year ago. So the fastest annual gain since December of 1981. That is a lot for the U.S. and, of course, squeezing the general public and Americans as a whole. Energy prices, prices of food, etc. Now, when the U.S. goes out and assists Ukraine militarily to the tune of billions of dollars, then the question has to be asked, aren't Americans getting squeezed as a result?
The economic breakdown process in the United States is breathtaking. It's getting worse all the time. On May 26th, the new official figures came out that in the first quarter of 2022, the United States gross domestic product went down by 1.5% in absolute terms. And this is an understatement. Manufacturing declined and other activity declined. And the opposite happened. Imports shot way up. Americans are existing by imports from China, from South America, and other parts of the world. And the inflation hitting people in the United States because there is not productive activity backing up the dollar.
That sounds pretty apocalyptic based on what she's saying. All right, Benjamin Chow rejoins us. The professor at Paris School of Technology and Business, who joins us from Beijing, China. Benjamin Chow, welcome back. The U.S. and its allies are prolonging the Ukraine conflict. They've been accused of that. They're not going for the diplomatic route to try to reach some kind of resolve on this. And the U.S. has actually made no bones about its intentions and goal to weaken Russia militarily. And now, in this case in point, the Europeans are following the U.S. lead. But at the same time, they're shooting themselves in the foot. Their economies are suffering as a result. Isn't the U.S. at fault for following a policy on Ukraine that is actually, in some sense, to the detriment of the world economically?
Frankly, almost everyone sees that NATO did not want to see a de-escalation of tension since late February, before the military conflict has started. The NATO could have rejected Ukraine's entry to NATO outright, and the situation would be de-escalated immediately back then.
The inflationary trend is not limited to Europe alone. Prices in the U.S. are also rising drastically. The Labor Department reported earlier in May that consumer prices have jumped 8.3% last month from a year ago. The United States consumer confidence also edged lower in May, as Americans' view of their present and future prospects dimmed in the midst of persistent inflation. Consumer confidence index dipped to 106.4 in May from 108.6 in April.
For example, I went into the grocery store about a couple of weeks ago and I picked up a few small onions. And when I looked up on the register, it said that it was over $5. And I told the cashier, like, this isn't right. Like, this price has got to be wrong. Not for the two onions. Two or three onions should not be $5.
I don't think it's reached the highest point. I think that's probably still yet to come. You know, it's in bad shape right now. I don't think the worst has come yet.
Just recently, the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen admitted that she erred last year, predicting that elevated inflation would not pose a continuing problem.
Sooner or later, we will see a recession, and the answer may actually be somewhat sooner rather than somewhat later. The Federal Reserve head and the Secretary of Treasury are meeting with the President of the United States even now, and clearly they have a mission in mind. Not a mission impossible, but a mission to cut inflation down to something closer to the 2% target rate than the 6.3% rate that we've seen recently. That is going to hurt the economy. It's not going to be a steep recession, a deep recession. It's not going to see unemployment rates going up very sharply, but we are, by the end of this year or early next year, probably going to see something that would be called a recession, or at least a slowing of the rate of growth to something that's close to zero.
A number of reasons have been cited for the rising inflationary trend across the globe. The war in Ukraine and the ensuing sanctions that the West imposed on Russia have seriously disrupted global business and trade and affected regional and international players. Ukraine's economy shrank 16% in the first quarter of 2022 compared to last year's first quarter, and it could be down by 40% by the end of the year. Russia has already suffered from the consequences of the sanctions. Furthermore, bottlenecks in global trade is also a serious factor. The delivery of goods and services has been seriously weakened due to the aftermath of the war
and the pre-existing pandemic restrictions. And there's the fear that new variations of the COVID virus could cause disruptions in major economies. China has just ended tough COVID restrictions that were imposed following a surge in cases in several cities, including Shanghai. Given the current situation, there's a big question mark on Washington's insistence to send more weapons to Ukraine. The weapons will prolong the war and cause more humanitarian and economic damage. It seems that the U.S. is determined to make this war continue at the expense of Ukrainians, Europeans, and its own people.
Even before inflation became the economic monster that it is, ravaging the economies of different countries across the world, the inflation momentum was already there, and it had nothing to do with the Ukraine war. It had to do with one thing, globalization. First, what is globalization? Globalization is the process by which businesses or other organizations develop international influence or start operating on an international scale. And what does globalization have to do with inflation? This is the reason. Experts says U.S. undermining globalization by seeing China as a threat. Tensions between China and the U.S. boiled over when the former U.S. President Donald Trump came into power, who waged trade and technology wars. The former U.S. president promised that his American First policy would work to the advantage of Americans, but that did not happen. Trump's tariffs to imports of Chinese goods was a policy that hurt U.S. consumers more than those in China. The policy backfired and hurt U.S. consumers and companies. One study concluded that U.S. exporters had to pay higher prices for components imported from China. Tariffs on imported washing machines raised prices for washers by almost 12% and on dryers as well. Costs that weren't passed on to the consumer were absorbed by importers. And at this point, prices began to rise for many commodities that were imported from China into the U.S. or were not viewed feasible by companies to import it from China. But costs within the U.S. for these items were much more than that from China. According to one economist, by inserting itself in global value chains in manufacturing and assembly, China, through its competitive advantage in labor-intensive goods, gave multinational corporations a low-cost means to massively boost production and sales. Add to that COVID-19 and now the Ukraine war, and maybe the coming clash with China. The U.S. is fast-tracking itself to unprecedented inflation levels, with the EU to maybe follow the U.S. lead. That does it for this edition of the program. Thanks for watching. Please send us any comments or critique that you may have of the program. Contact info is on your screens now.
The worldwide inflation epidemic, if we can call it that, is not just about Ukraine. It was there actually even before the pandemic. Actually, it was there from a long time ago. And why do I say that? Because it existed in the form of what's called inequality. You've heard the phrase before, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. Well, that's exactly the case. That's been like that for a long time, purchasing power of the poor to have become less, so any price increase of any kind to hurt them. According to the latest, today 71% of the world's population lives in countries where inequality has grown. The U.S. and its NATO member allies have now compounded this through the Ukraine war. That does it for this edition of the program. For me, Kavit Ahway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. In previous episodes, we were talking about how superpowers and the fathers of the Charter of Human Rights, they themselves are the ones who are depriving people of their own nations and people of other countries their most basic fundamental rights. Let's take an example, because we want to see the violations that have been done by those countries, by those who are claimed to be the champions of human rights. Let's take China, for example. Yeah, China, I agree, is a communist country. It's a country where just the normal people don't have the right to talk or the right to express their freedoms. So there's a lot happening. But within China, we have the Muslims, the Uyghurs who live in Xinjiang in China, and there are, you know, I don't know, they make about 25% of that province, or even more, just a bit less than half. Millions of them are being prosecuted under the crimes that have been done towards them are just, you know, too hard to even talk about. For example, human beings have the right to live, right? Those Muslims, those minority in China, they don't have the right to live. The only time they have the right to live is when they follow what the government tells them. So, for example, we see them, they're trying to, when it comes to women, for example, they're trying to make sure that women do not give birth to any more kids. So they do not reproduce. And that's a crime that China is doing towards Muslims. So they're trying to inject all these female women with hormones that stop them from giving birth. It's a problem. That's a crime against humanity. This is what we call ethnic cleansing, because he's trying to make sure that these particular people and this particular, at least let's say, tribe, they do not exist in, let's say, 50, 60, 80 years from now. I mean, where is the human rights then when those people are prosecuted in this regard? That's one. When we see people themselves, they do not have freedom, meaning there are hundreds of thousands of Muslims are in concentration camps in China where they are pretty much prisoners, and they have no freedom to go outside. They are in a camp. We ask the questions, where are those who claim to be champions of human rights? Why aren't they saying anything when they see that happening? Unless they can come and say, well, these guys are not human, so we don't care about them. They are from a different planet, and they are, you know, worse than animals, because if there was a dog or an animal being, or a panda being punished or being abused, you will see the whole world in a roar when it comes to human rights. I mean, when it comes to animal rights. But when it comes to human rights, no one seems to care. Millions of people in China being prosecuted, and no one is saying a word. no one is even caring. You don't even hear about it in the news. I would say 90% of the world, of the dwellers of the world, of human beings, they don't even know what I'm talking about. Like, what? Muslims in China being prosecuted since when? People don't even know. Even Muslims themselves, most of them, if not almost all of them, they don't have an idea. Let us take a break and then we'll come back right after.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program for humanity coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Just before the break, I was getting excited, or more like saddened, talking about the Muslims in China who are suffering so much because of their faith. So we said when it comes to the right of living, they are being cleansly. You know, there's a cleansing, what we call ethical cleansing. They've been terminated from their roots. When it comes to their freedom, they are being prisoned. When it comes to their religious, just doing their religious beliefs. I mean, why would it harm you if I pray and fast and apply my religion? I'm not doing anyone any harm. Why is it that in China, for these Muslims, they cannot pray? They cannot read Quran, they cannot fast, they cannot practice any form of religion. Even to the extent that the Chinese government, they turned the mosques into museums where people go and watch, not to perform prayer. If you pray outside, or if they know that you are praying, you get imprisoned. I mean, don't take my word for it. Go on YouTube and see for yourself. That even I've saw one of the people who went to this area, he could not, even when he says salamun alaykum to people, they wouldn't reply to him out of fear. They can't say the word because if they do, they might be prosecuted. So when it comes to their faith, to their belief, they are also prosecuted. To even go further, those Muslims in China, to make sure that they violate every aspect of their rights, even when it comes to food and drinking, they don't have the freedom to do that. They are, those who are in the concentration camps, they are being fed pigs and alcohol. No, China, obviously, the government, they know that Muslims, it's forbidden for them to consume alcohol and pig's meat, or at least haram meat. But they are deliberately feeding them pigs and giving them alcohol just so they could take their beliefs away from them forcefully. Again, we get to say, where are those who speak about human rights? I mean, at least give them the right to practice their religion. Now, if you, under the pretext that, oh, well, if you're religious, you're a terrorist, then, well, I mean, surely you have intelligence agencies that can determine who's a terrorist, who's not. But you can't generalize that to millions of people. Millions of people, they can't all be terrorists. Maybe out of these millions, maybe you have 1,000, 2,000. All right, go 10,000. But what about the rest of innocent people? Kids, families, women, old men, young people. They're all being prosecuted. They can't practice their faith. They can't eat halal food. They can't pray outside. They can't go to the mosques. They can't even fast. Then where is the human right here? So again, when we look at the superpowers and we say, well, since you, United Nations and China is part of you, then how come they not applying it? Shouldn't it be applied? Or is that they are excluded from the list? What's going on here? We leave it here and we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Allahumma salli ala
محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.